Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
It is 108. I'm Mike Ferguson in for Annie Fry. A little bit later on today, actually, this is going to be fun. Right around 143, 145, something like that. Wrestling is coming back to St. Louis to the Chase. And even if you are not a wrestling fan, this was a huge deal for years. And so it's actually coming back. So we're actually going to talk to Ed Wheatley, who is writing a book about, or actually he's written the book about the history of wrestling at the Chase in particular. I know that a lot of people have stories about that. And, you know, just there's something weird about that particular entertainment that everybody says, oh, I don't ever watch that, but they're still doing so well financially. There's somebody out there watching and buying the
stuff.
And
you know at least one wrestler.
I do.
Well, not personally, but I'm talking about in like your mind. You like
Oh yeah. Who just came
Dwayne
to mind?
Dwayne The Rock Johnson.
Okay, you said Dwayne The Rock Johnson. Who came to your mind?
Tyrus.
There you go.
Wow.
Hopefully we'll talk to him here in just a minute or so here. I guess, see, when I was growing up, it was the Ric Flair, Hulk Hogan.
Randy Orton.
He's from St. Louis. Yeah. When I was a kid, I watched his dad.
Yeah, there's
Cowboy Bob Orton.
You wrestling people, man, you guys know all that stuff. I only know the little like tidbits about, oh, Randy Orton's from St. Louis. I don't know much about the world. So I guess I'll get clued in here.
Maybe. So, but no, we're not going to spend the whole time talking about wrestling with Tyrus once we get him on the line here. But it's funny because it's one of those unique St. Louis things with wrestling at the Chase.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it was just such a huge deal with it.
It became WWF bought it for a while.
Bought wrestling at the Chase?
Yeah.
Okay.
They were part of that. This was like in the 80s. Like they said that was going to be a part of their thing because back then, Vince didn't. There weren't any exclusive contracts at the time,
right?
And so, like, you could have Hulk Hogan be at Wrestling at the Chase, but you could also not have Hulk Hogan.
Yeah, I think they were affiliated with the National Wrestling Alliance. They were like the Central States territory, but they could contract with anybody. Yeah, they could bring in a Hulk Hogan or Bob Backlund or
the Young Rock television show. You'll find all of this out because they wanted people to be exclusive, and they weren't.
I've not watched that show, because I don't get the appeal of The Rock. He's one of the biggest stars in the world. Did you know that at any given time in the entire world, there's usually only about, you probably do know this, Carl.
Yes.
There's usually only about a half dozen to a dozen people who would consider A-list celebrities.
Mm-hmm. Like that Paul McCartney.
I'm talking about people in movies.
Oh, right.
That them walking up to anybody and saying, I want to do this movie, it will get made.
Yeah. Green light. Automatic.
And people move in and out of that category all the time. Like Will Ferrell, for instance.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
He was in that category.
Right.
But now he has to like use a property that already exists, like do a sequel to Anchorman or whatever.
Right.
It's like he can't walk up to a movie executive and say, I want to make a movie. And they say, blank check, go for it.
Right.
There's only like a handful of those people,
Tom
and The Rock
Cruise
is still one of them.
Yeah.
Will Smith, maybe.
I think Will Smith might have
He's on the bubble.
Out.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But like Jennifer Lawrence is another one that, I mean, we're getting into the weeds a little bit, but she was right on there. Like she could get anything made. And then she made one bad movie called Mother.
Oh, my God.
And now she can't get anything made. Like, it's that fickle.
So bad.
Wow. Yeah, well, Dwayne The Rock Johnson, and by the way, this is, I don't mean to pull the curtain back too much, but this is called stalling for time while we try to get Tyrus on the phone.
I think we might give up on that.
We may have to, I think we have to move on.
Oh, yeah, but I mean, he can, he's funny as an actor. He's a good actor. He's obviously a good-looking guy. He can sing. I'm like, dude, leave some talent around for the rest of us.
You know, something I was looking forward to talking about that with Tyrus that I'll just bring up to you guys because we hadn't talked about it ahead of time, and it's making news. But it's one of those stories that kind of they floated out there, and I'm looking at The Hill has reported on this. Nobody can really know what to make of a story like this because it doesn't fall into anybody's narrative. Like if you're left, this doesn't feed your narrative. If you're on the right, it doesn't feed your narrative because it's President Obama coming out and talking about the dangers of cancel culture.
Yeah, which is interesting.
It's very interesting.
Because right now we've got a St. Louis-centric story on cancel culture.
Oh, do we?
Ellie Kemper.
Yeah, with Ellie Kemper.
Oh, with Ellie Kemper. Right. Yeah. Yeah, what a weird story.
Yeah, and I'm not going to lie. I didn't know what the veiled prophet ball was.
Expect that she did?
No,
like,
I had
it's so
no
ridiculous.
Idea. Her parents made her do it.
Yeah, I had no idea what that was. But I guess to me, what's interesting is people immediately when you're accused of something, especially in Hollywood, maybe because of what you just said, one actor has one bad movie or mediocre movie, and suddenly they're not as marketable as they used to be.
Oh, Jennifer Lawrence is still marketable,
right? But
just can't turn around and say, hey, I want to do
this. I want to make a movie. Okay, here you go.
So Ellie Kemper, turns out when she was a teenager, she was involved in this veiled prophet ball or whatever it was called.
Yeah,
which
right.
Long before she ever was involved with it, excluded people based on race, and they were racist and they were bigots. And somehow her being a teenager, being involved in it after they'd opened it up to everybody is
in
now
1999.
Yeah, and now it's something that she says she feels that she has to apologize for, and she's groveling. How about somebody grow a backbone and just say, yeah, I guess they did have that. I didn't know that. Deal with it.
I mean, her response aside, which I was also very disappointed
just
in.
Just groveling.
It was whenever those responses come out, you're like, that person does not care about this story at all.
No.
Is completely just trying to save their career because they think it's going to be bad for them, which it might. But yeah. If you don't live in St. Louis, I mean, the VP Fair, right? That's all I knew what the veiled prophet was at all. I didn't know it was an organization outside of VP Fair. And she probably didn't either. And I didn't know the history of the organization. No. I knew nothing about this organization. They probably had a ball at some point, and she showed up for it, and she won the talent competition or whatever it was. And for her to have to apologize for that, we know a little bit more being in St. Louis because we know what the VP stands for.
Yeah.
But how many of these stories nationwide when they come out that somebody does a deep dive dig into the history of something just to prove that somebody might have had racist origins, so the person associated with it is now racist? Like, it's so crazy.
I used to live in Pittsfield, Illinois. My dad was a pastor of the Baptist Church in Pittsfield, Illinois in the 1970s. Pittsfield, Illinois used to have sunset laws on the books. Very racist past to it.
What is a sunset law?
That is where those who are not white have to be out of the city limits by sundown.
No kidding.
A lot of cities used to have that.
That is shocking.
That was on the books through recently?
I think it was on the books.
But not enforced.
Not really, but it was still technically on the books. So because I lived in Pittsfield, Illinois, am I now tagged with a racist past that particular city?
If you were
which,
on the city council, maybe.
No, I was in
Dude,
kindergarten.
No, that's a good point because I guarantee that if you became some sort of celebrity that somebody wanted to squash, they could look into your history and say, oh, Pittsfield, you were from Pittsfield. Let's see. Yeah. There's this sunshine law. Oh,
sunset law,
so,
yeah.
Or sunset
Used
law.
Used to be, yeah.
So that means that Mike Ferguson, when he grew up, was privileged white. Mm-hmm. He could go out after sunset, and a black resident of Pittsfield couldn't.
I used to drive back and forth between Columbia and Kansas City a lot when I was in college. I would stop and have lunch in Concordia, right there off I-70. Well, Concordia, even up to, 30, 40 years ago, still had Klan rallies in there. They don't anymore, but I supported their economy when I bought lunch and I bought a cheeseburger there on the way to and from. So could a enterprising headline, say, you know, radio host supported, former racist town by, you know, buying something in a town known to have this history. Now, Concordia is a really nice little place. I haven't been there in years, but they don't do that stuff anymore.
Well, it would be, you know, if there was a reason to showcase the history of this town, that should be included.
Absolutely.
But to tie somebody like you, or to tie somebody like Ellie Kemper,
right,
to like the reason for this existing, and it happens all the time.
No, there was the ESPN reporter, or the woman who was hired to be a reporter, and I forgot, I should have looked it up, but turns out she had a questionable tweet when she was 16. Well, now she works her way up to ESPN. They go, oh, we didn't know about that tweet. You got to go.
I mean, also ridiculous, but at least, I'm not defending that, but at least we're to the point where it's actually the person who said it, not like
right,
something you're associated with loosely.
So here's my take on this, is that we know that media goes after, you know, these people with Ellie Kemper, somebody who thinks of themselves as a, you know, enterprising investigative journalist. I just have a feeling that if more people, celebrities or not, I think they're afraid of others in the media. If they just finally said, screw you, deal with it. They got rid of the racist policies 20 years before I was ever involved. Deal with it. So what?
They are afraid of,
yeah, they're
of
afraid.
Their
they're,
peers.
They feel like the only answer they have is the thank you for holding me accountable
well,
approach.
I think they believe what you and I are saying right now.
Right.
Like, I'm not responsible for this. I showed up at a party.
Right.
Whatever. But I think that they're afraid to be the first, because if they do speak out, even in mildly, like saying, look, I have no affiliation with this,
mm-hmm,
that would be the truth, and it would be kind of standing up, which is not what Ellie Kemper did.
Right.
But they're afraid to even do that, because they're afraid that even that will get them canceled.
Right.
Or shunned mildly, you
right,
know? Like, oh, next sitcom that comes up, eh, I don't know, there's been some kind of stuff about Ellie Kemper. Maybe we won't
they're
consider
not even worried. I don't even think they're worried as much about the marketing of it. I think they're just wanting to punish people within Hollywood. You know, we're woke. They look at themselves as some kind of cultural trendsetter, where there's the rest of the world, Republican, conservative, Democrat, liberal, whatever. We're saying either you make a good, entertaining show or you don't. I mean, I think the Brooklyn Nine-Nine is hilarious. I love that show. The actress who plays Rosa Diaz, mm-hmm, and I forgot her name.
Stephanie Beatriz?
Yes. She is a hardcore left-wing Marxist who is beyond anything that is sane. But you know what? Her character is really funny. I'm going to keep watching the show. And if Ellie Kemper, for instance, had said, yeah, I even knew about that 20 years before I was born, they had to fix a bunch of stuff and open up to everybody. But yeah, I heard it. But yeah, I even heard about that. Even if she knew about it, which she may not have. If she said,
what did you remember about? Were you woke at 19?
No, 19. I was at Mizzou, and I had discovered that I wasn't there living in my parents' house anymore. I was 2 years out on my own. I moved out when I was 17, and all I cared about when I was 19
is next beer.
Yeah, I was looking for parties, and I was chasing girls and trying not to flunk my college classes. That's all
and,
I was doing,
and not in that order.
Yeah. Because I did flunk some.
But that's the culture that you just said.
Right.
I mean, to wrap this whole conversation up, we as people who are conservative overlook the politics of the entertainers that we're watching all the
mm-hmm
time.
Yeah.
But apparently leftists can't do that. Like, if you come out and
right,
you're a conservative, there are very few openly conservative actors and actresses who get regular work. I can think of maybe Bruce Willis.
Clint Eastwood.
Clint Eastwood is a rare exception, and he is open about it. But he's also 95 years old
and
doesn't care.
He also doesn't care enough that, like, he'll work with Sean Penn, and so
well, that should be the way it all is.
It should be, yes.
But like, we're talking about him like he's this
right,
you know, unicorn.
He's not the norm.
Yeah,
well, he is a unicorn.
I know.
Well, I mean, you look at all the actors who have, I mean, sort of come out of the closet as conservatives. I mean, you know, John Voight.
They don't get work.
Hercules. It was Kevin Sorbo.
Kevin Sorbo. He gets work in the conservative Christian
right,
movie industry, but that's
yeah,
it.
Because you know he's making bank on that, right?
Well, he's doing okay.
Yeah. There is a market for that.
There's a growing market for that,
yeah. Most of the movies, and I am an evangelical Christian, but most of those movies just suck. Some of them are really good, though.
Hey, look, I used to work in that industry, and I can tell you most of those suck.
Yeah. I will tell you, though, have you seen The Chosen?
No, I haven't, and I need to.
You've got to.
Because I know the VidAngel people.
So good.
And everybody says it's fantastic, and amazing. that's their shining star right
amazing.
Now.
Amazing. Yeah. You've got to see it. All right. Okay, let's see here. It's 122
Mike
on Mike
movies.
Ferguson. Yes.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress-them-on-the-third-date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
I wanted to ask Tyrus if he was coming to St. Louis later this year when the wrestling card comes. Pack it
up, pack it in. Maybe your buddy Ed knows.
Maybe he, yeah, maybe. We'll talk to him in a little bit here.
Ed Wheatley.
It would have been fun to see if Tyrus, if you're going to be in town, you got to come to the studio, man.
Is there an actual possibility that he could be a part of that?
He's with the group that is doing their wrestling card
so
there.
So it's real.
It's, yeah. I don't know.
That'd be wild.
But we may not know. You have to remember to, I think Tim's in next week. Have Tim ask him.
See, he's pretty legit. I mean, he came from like the top tier of
right.
wrestling.
He was
right?
in the WWF, or I guess E.
I just assumed that whatever was coming to the chase would be like, you know, the ones that are done in high school gyms.
That's Broadway. That's Broadway. What was
you're not even speaking a language I know. So
South Broadway Athletic Club.
Oh, is there a local?
There was.
Oh, okay. Yeah, no, because I remember when I was a kid, there were three organizations. There was WWF, there was the AWA, and there was the NWA. And the NWA is the one I think that was affiliated with the Wrestling at the Chase. Mm. And that's the organization that is coming back later this year. I think that actually I read they're doing it. It's one of their pay-per-view events. So you can actually
watch these are legit wrestlers. These aren't like people that look like you and me that put on costumes.
No.
Because that's what I'm picturing.
No. These are people who do this for a living.
Backyard bum fights.
Yeah.
No, exactly. you know, with all of the controversies in politics that we've got, do we need to spend more for stimulus spending for COVID? Do small businesses need more money? Should we deploy troops over this part of the Middle East? You would think that there are areas where everybody could agree. Could we agree that we should not be creating animal-human hybrids with our science dollars?
Are we for sure?
Who's doing that?
Yeah, who's doing this?
Okay, so here's what happened. This is one of those things that happened last week, but it just kind of now is coming out in the reports because it was in this committee hearing and it was this bill on one of the early stages, really wonky in the weed stuff. But there's something called the something technology bill. Where'd it go? Anyway, I'll find it here in a second. But there was an amendment to a technology bill that three Republican senators put forward that would have banned the creation of human-animal, I don't know how to say this word, chimeras, C-H-I-M-E-R-A-S? Is that how you say that?
Chimeras?
Sure.
Chimeras? I don't know. But that's the word being used for taking something from a living part of one species and putting it to another and creating something new. And so this amendment would have banned the creation of human-animal hybrid life forms with science dollars in the United States. And this amendment that would have banned that failed in the United States Senate.
Now, hold on. You're still not telling us who's doing this.
Okay, so let's see here. Well, first of all, it's happened in other countries. China has done this.
Are you surprised?
They've done
it? No, they've actually. Well, they've started the research on it.
Is that their Minotaur farms? That's probably where that came from.
I honestly would be tempted to support funding that. I'm just saying that's That's
only if it's for you.
So scientists in the United States are prohibited from experimenting on human embryos beyond 14 days, but there is experimentation. But
I thought they just are trying to change that.
Yeah,
and the Catholic Church said that they were changing their rules on that too.
Yeah. So here I'm looking at this article here. Human animal chimera. I don't know
it's
how it's
chimera,
called.
But I don't.
Human animal research is prohibited from receiving federal funds, but it still occurs in private labs with some regulation. And in 2016, the National Institutes for Health considered lifting a moratorium on experimentation involving human stem cells in animal embryos. Although the NIH has yet to lift that moratorium, the research has continued to advance in the private sector at an alarming rate, according to this article. One of the senators who proposed this saying, yeah, we're not going to fund human-animal hybrid research. He's quoted as saying, this is Senator James Lankford from Oklahoma. I'm quoting him here. We shouldn't need to clarify in law that creating animal-human hybrids is ethically unthinkable, but sadly the need for that very clear distinction has arrived. Currently, the National Institutes of Health does not do this research, and we need to keep it that way. Researchers who are attempting these horrific, once science fiction experiments should focus on valuing the dignity of human life, not trying to genetically merge and manipulate humans and animals. I can't believe I just read that story.
So we're not talking about people, you know, walking around with tails and, you know,
well, not yet,
rabbit ears,
minotaurs,
but we are talking about them. You see that this is a weird subject because it seems like right now, if you put regulations on it, you could probably get away with some of this small, like if you're just sort of like clashing cells together and trying to find different cures for things or whatever,
right.
That's probably what they're doing.
Growing ear forms on mice for, you know, plenty.
For humans.
There was somewhere because the skin of a mouse, I guess, is compatible with humans. So if somebody needs that body part grafted back on after a burn or an accident or cancer, they were finding ways to grow body parts in other things. But we're talking about here, this literally was saying we're going to ban putting, you know, human embryos in animals and their stem cells, you know, animal stem cells in something. I mean, it is not even crossed between animal species. It's human and animals.
Right. So it's actual hybrid cells, at least.
Yes.
See, the problem with this is that right now you could make an argument that some of this stuff, like, it's so small, you're not actually like creating a being.
Right.
But at some point, if you don't put restrictions on it, somebody's going to be walking around like, I got a liger and it's half tiger,
right.
half lion, and also it's a man. And it's talking to me in my sleep. That's going to, like, stuff like that will happen if we don't put some sort of regulation.
And that's what this was, yeah.
In 2017, a human pig chimera has been reported to be created. It was 0.001% human cells, the rest being pig.
Was there a party line split on this? Was it Republicans voting for restrictions and Democrats voting against it, or was it just all over the place?
It doesn't say, but it does say it was 49-48 was the vote.
That means
49-48.
That means a couple of senators were like, I'm not touching
no,
this.
No, thank you.
Yeah.
But that could be party line.
It could be.
40. I mean, there were 48 senators who voted no. Or no, I'm sorry, 49 voters. 49 senators voted no, we do not want to stop creating.
It was voted on party lines.
Jeez.
And normally this happens in plants to create pretty flowers.
Well, that's fine.
Yeah.
That's not crossing. This isn't Day of the Triffids.
Right. Soylent Green is people.
I'm just saying, have you seen Planet of the Apes?
Yes.
How well does that work out for everybody involved?
It's fine for the planet. It's not good for the humans.
Yeah.
And aren't we concerned about climate change? All the cars are gone. Think about it.
Finally. Hey, everybody's riding horses.
Everybody's riding horses. Exactly.
It was bizarre to me that there are even people who are saying, I have an idea. Let's see what happens if.
there's got to be money in this.
For somebody.
Are you talking about just before we break, are you talking about just, is this about federal funding for it, or is it about making it illegal?
This is about making it illegal. It's already, federal funding already is prohibited from being spent on this, but this would make it illegal. So if, a private university somewhere or a biotech or whatever bio lab said, you know what, let's just find out what happens. You know, what if we wanted to see what happens if we merged a, you know, chimpanzee DNA with a human DNA, and let's see if we can grow a monkey person.
You know, the problem with this kind of stuff is that if other countries are already doing it, and it's like it's borderline ethics,
we're behind.
You don't really know, yeah. Like if it could actually come up with some cures for things or new medicines that, and you're not like creating new beings, it should be regulated. But you know, I don't know if you want to make it just completely illegal, because then it'll happen elsewhere, and then we'll just have to sort of be the recipients of things other people will make.
And then they cure cancer, and we're screwed.
Or that kind of thing could happen.
I don't know where, but apparently scientists somewhere have, and I think this is the Chinese one, created embryos that are a combination of human and monkey cells for the first time. And the results of that research were actually published in one of their industry medical scientific journals called Cell. And so the research prompted ethical debates all over the world, whether that would be, you know, is that a person? Is that an animal? What is it? How do you, you know, deal with that from an ethical perspective?
Well, let me do a complete 180 and say it. Just because China's doing it doesn't mean we should do it.
Yeah. Precisely.
In 2005, the first time that this approached Congress, the Human Chimera Prohibition Act by Senator Sam Brownback.
Oh, I know. Okay.
It's been around for 16 years already.
And we still have not said no.
We're getting closer, apparently.
Wow. All right. Still ahead here. Remember wrestling at the Chase, or did you hear the stories about it? It's quite a history. And not even just if you're a wrestling person, because I'm not a wrestling person anymore, but it's got such an interesting history. And it's coming back to St. Louis. We're talking about it just ahead here on the Andy Fry Show.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Odyssey is giving you a chance to win a trip to London to see Taylor Swift at the Eras Tour. It's Tay in the UK.
Hey, it's Taylor.
Just download the free Odyssey app, log in and listen to a participating station for a minimum of 60 minutes to get your daily entry. And you could win a chance to fly off to London with three friends and see Taylor.
I can't wait to see you at the Eras Tour in London.
For more, go to odyssey.com/Taylor.
Tay in the UK.
It's on the Odyssey app.
Thanks to Republic Records.
This is a national contest.
I still remember when I found out that pro wrestling was not an actual athletic competition when I was a kid.
Scripted.
Broke my heart. I had to admit my dad was right.
It's not fake.
Scripted.
I've never been into it. Like from the top level to this local level that you're talking about, yeah. I don't get the appeal. So change my mind.
I'm not changing your mind.
Okay.
I'm Mike Ferguson. It is 1:44. And here's how it happened. I used to go to, when I was a kid, you know, we're talking grade school, junior high, I would go to the matches at the local high schools and things. And it's when they had the local circuits, or they had they called them the territories. And in this area here, it was the National Wrestling Alliance Central States Territory. So I'd go to Hannibal. I lived in Camp Point at the time, and Camp Point, Illinois, just outside Quincy. You know, they'd come to Quincy, they'd come to Palmyra, they'd come to Hannibal, they'd come to all these little towns. And it was the ones that you could see on TV, you know, on USA Network or on WTBS, and that's how they made their money in between. They went to do these little shows. And I think I can still say it. This is how they classified it. I saw a midget match, which is how it was billed at the time. And I don't remember what little town I was in. And they did their match, and everybody laughed, and it was real funny to everybody at the time. And then a week or so later, I turn on WWF on USA Network or whatever it was. Same two wrestlers doing the exact same match, move for move for move. And I'm here, a little kid going, wait a minute. He should have known that was oh, Dad was right.
It's basically choreography.
It's choreography, very athletic.
But a soap opera for men.
I would agree with that. Yeah. The little bit that I've watched professional wrestling, which was like 15 years ago for about 5 minutes, I was surprised at how little actual wrestling there was.
It's a lot of
like when you watch it on TV, they're talking and they're
proselytizing.
Yeah, they're coming out and they're flexing and they have these big entrances and all this stuff.
There's something about that entertainment that seeps over into culture. I mean, can you argue that Ric Flair is not a cultural icon?
No, I can't. I know who Ric Flair is.
Right, exactly. And that's right. Yeah. Joined now by Ed Wheatley. So you may know Ed from the documentaries of the St. Louis Browns that he did with Channel 9 that's been honored by the Baseball Hall of Fame. He's won awards. He's got two books that are on the list of the top 100 baseball books that you should buy by multiple. Well, now Ed is branching out, and he's looking at the history of wrestling at the Chase. And, Ed, good to talk to you again. But let me ask you this, Ed. When I was looking at the announcement that the National Wrestling Alliance is coming back to the Chase later this year, they're actually going to do another Wrestling at the Chase. All over all the TV stations, the radio stations, people were commenting on social media. They had an immediate memory, and they were all excited about it. And they may or may not be wrestling fans. It was just cool that it was coming back to the Chase. What was it about Wrestling at the Chase that still has that lasting legacy in St. Louis?
Well, I mean, first of all, St. Louis was the wrestling capital of the world, thanks to Sam Muchnick, who was the president of the NWA for nearly 30 years. So everything in the world centered around St. Louis. And then when he created this show with Harold Koppler, Wrestling at the Chase, you brought instant dignity to professional wrestling. You know, you got to remember when this is all starting in the, you know, professional wrestling's golden years or the 1950s and the 60s, we didn't have all this forms of entertainment that we have today. I mean, in my book, I write this story about, you know, can you imagine the kids today thinking back that there were only three TV stations, one TV in a house, it's this huge, big wooden box with a real tiny screen and, you know, fuzzy black and white. But that's what it was. It was entertainment. It was, you know, something that was good versus evil, made people laugh. It felt good. And that's what it was. I mean, Bob Costas and I have talked about this a lot. It was just feeling good watching this. But what it did was, I said, the Chase was the most opulent hotel in the city. It was where kings and queens and Major League Baseball, anybody's who's who, would come and stay at the Chase. All the big social events, the Veil Prophet, the Muni Opera, all their black tie things were held there in the Chase, and specifically the Chorus and Room. And now, let's put it this way. Joe Garagiola, who was the first announcer of Wrestling at the Chase, he said, I used to live about a mile and a half from the Chase. We would drive by it all the time in our car, and we would simply say, wouldn't it be neat to win the lottery so we could just go in once? So now, all of a sudden, what happens? The whole world is invited into this place that people covet wanting to be. I mean, this is where Frank Sinatra, I mean, the Chase Club inside the Chase Park Plaza Hotel, that was one of the top nightclubs in America. Nat King Cole, Frank Sinatra, Rosemary Clooney, Dean Martin, they all came and played there. And now all the people, the regular Joes, every Saturday night and Sunday morning are invited in. And that was the magic. As Luce says, we used to wrestle in cow palaces, dark, danky place, but now we're under these shimmering chandeliers of the Coruscant Room, surrounded by people dressed to the nines, women in evening gloves, and all this. And that is what really turned this fascination. You know, wrestling by Sam Muchnick's perspective was very athleticism. I mean, Dick the Bruiser himself, he played for the Green Bay Packers. Very few realize it, but most of these guys played professional football. It was choreographed athleticism, is how I put it. But it was it was fun to watch, as I said earlier. Good versus evil, that whole power thing.
Yeah, I mean, you could go see movies to see good versus evil. You know, at that point, the, you know, Western novels kids would read, but there was just something different about the live action right there. Of course,
yeah.
Wrestling at the Chase on KPLR was just, I mean, just a massive thing, and the legacy far outlived, still outlives the actual show itself. There's just something about that, especially in St. Louis, that people just have a soft spot for. A soft spot for in their heart. And so, Ed, I mean, there has been at least one other book I know of that was written about wrestling at the Chase.
Yep.
What made you say, all right, we're going to deep dive into this and we're going to do another one? Because this is so local here.
Well, they're actually related, and they're actually, it is beyond local. I'm telling you, this thing is, the news of our book coming is all across the country, the pre-orders coming in and all this. But what really happened is, you know, I write baseball books.
Right.
I make these movies that get made about my books with PBS. And I was working on a book on the Negro Leagues, kind of an offshoot of my last book when the pandemic hit. And, you know, the Negro League Baseball Museum in Kansas City, Cooperstown, where I work out a lot, they were all closed. And I was, like, kind of struggling. We were making a film on my latest book for PBS, Baseball in St. Louis, Little Leagues to Major Leagues. And I was like, what am I going to do? How do I keep my momentum going? And a gentleman named Herb Simmons, who is a pretty well-known around the nation wrestling promoter, came to me and said, you've won all these awards for these coffee tables books. Larry Matisick was my best friend. He is my protege, and we were proteges of Sam Muchnick. Larry is the one who wrote the book about 15, 18 years ago that you're speaking of. And it was more of like a one-inch thick book, storybook. You know, it wasn't pictures. And, you know, fortunate, I have found a formula of writing these kind of coffee table books. I'll put 400, 500, 700 pictures in them, and with little vignettes of stories that triggers people's memories and brings them back. So he said, would you do this? And I said, well, you know, baseball is my genre. I remember the show. You know, I'm not a cult follower, but, you know, I have an interest. But I said, getting the pictures. He said, don't worry about it. I own it all. So with that, I just dug in. I called Bob Costas. I called Ted Koppler. I called you know, the Muchnick family, the Gargiola family, and everybody says, please do it, please do it. So their inputs, their help, but more than anything, those are big names, great input. But everybody comes up and says, what are you working on now? And I'll kind of sheepishly go, Wrestling at the Chase. And then boom, the next 5, 10, 15 minutes, I sit and listen to their story. So the book is filled with stories. I mean, Amo Fazl, the restaurant here owns the Rich and Charlie's in Watson. You know, one day he came over and was asking me the same question. The next thing you know, he's telling me all about his grandma lived with him when they were young. And on Saturday nights, she had to be alone. She would go to her room because she wanted to watch Wrestling at the Chase undisturbed. And they'd be in the other room hearing her screaming and cussing and hollering at the TV. Open the door and look in, and there's grandma, 90 years old, down on the floor, all four knees, counting out the wrestler with the referee. This show, the memories of grandmas and grandmas. How many kids had to go to early church on Sunday morning so grandma or dad or whoever had to be home to watch the repeat of Wrestling at the Chase? It's story after story after story. And like you, Mike, in the intro, you know, it was like, for many kids, it was like being told there's no Santa Claus.
Right.
When you found out that Wrestling at the Chase wasn't real.
Ed, what is it about? Because, I mean, you know, Vince McMahon went through the big thing where he acknowledged that it's all scripted. It's not actually, you know, a sport. But I want to separate that out. These are still some of the most athletic, you know, people I've seen. But it still endures. They're still selling out arenas. They're still doing, again, coming back to the Chase later this year. What is it about this absurd sort of entertainment that just keeps going and going and going, even though we know that this is scripted?
Well, I think, you know, when I not only do I talk about Wrestling at the Chase, I go back and talk about the history of wrestling and how it got to Wrestling at the Chase. I mean, you know, if you go back, wrestling has always been kind of this cult thing in civilizations. You can go back into China. You can go back into, you know, Egypt and see some of the drawings and pyramids are in the drawings of Babylonia, and then it came to the Greeks and the Romans that led to the Olympics. So it was, it's always been a part of our society, but it was always that tug and forth kind of Greco-Roman style. And then, ironically, it evolved in St. Louis in the 1904 Olympics, which were where did they happen to take place? Just across the street from the Chase in Forest Park. And in the 1904 Olympics was the first time they had freestyle wrestling, you know, which is you can use your legs, you can basically use it, everything. And, you know, it evolved like that. And shortly thereafter came vaudeville. And professional wrestling, as we know it today, is the marriage of vaudeville and this free form of wrestling. And it just kept evolving. It was kind of a carnival act until the NWA and Sam Muchnick formed this national alliance and, you know, put these guidance and rules. And like I said, in the book, if there had never been a Sam Muchnick and there had never been the success of wrestling at the Chase, there may have never been a Vince McMahon in WWE, because it is really his legacy. And really what happened is Muchnick kept it, you know, we went from vaudeville to this really kind of pure athleticism on a mat. And then the 80s come, Muchnick retires, Vince McMahon steps in. Yep. And what do you have in the 80s? You got video games, you got cable TV, you got pay-per-view.
And Ed, so, I've got to jump in because we've got a hard break coming up here real quick. Where do we find information about the book?
You can go to our website, the Wrestling St. Louis book. You can go to reedypress.com, and it'll tell you everything, how to pre-order, where to get it, when to get it, and all about it.
All right. Hey, Ed Wheatley, appreciate it. And by the way, if you haven't checked out his book about the St. Louis Browns, you got to do it. I really enjoyed it. Good talking to you again, Ed.
Thank you, buddy. See you soon.
All right. I'm Mike Ferguson in for Andy Fry here, 314-241-9797.
Get more at 971talk.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.